Okay, good morning, everyone. Are we ready to go? Okay, we're going to make a start. Yeah, we ready there? Okay. Welcome to Bina 2026. This year is going to be a great year, please God. Also at Bina, lots of new Bina programs. Stay tuned. So, as I indicated on the WhatsApp, next week I'm going to start a new series. It's called, it's a very popular book going around. Every time I mentioned it, someone said, "Oh yeah, that's The Theory of Let Them by Mel Robbins." So I'm gonna have a look at that, and we're gonna explore it for the bit of a Jewish perspective. That's starting next week. But I'm starting next week because I wanted today just to, as I said, check in with ourselves. It was a very rough December and part of January. By the time the event on Hanukkah happened, the first on Hanukkah, we had broken up already. I think we stopped all the classes already, so we haven't had a time to reflect. But we know that talking things through and discussing things is always important. It's part of the processing sort of process. But now it's like 6 weeks, 7 weeks on, and of course things are different, meaning it's not finished, and people are still feeling it and feeling the pain and so on, but it's different emotions, different perspectives, different issues. And I thought we'd spend today just going through some of those maybe, and exploring them from not a therapeutic point of view, but from a Jewish point of view. They're not exclusive, by the way. And I want to say that very clearly. It's important. I mean, I'll talk about this later, but people are very resilient, but there are people that will struggle for a while. And if anyone is struggling, it's not a weakness to seek the proper help. So please do that. But it's also supported, as Jews, we also support ourselves and inspire ourselves by things that we learn from a Jewish perspective. I'm going to close the window. This is very noisy. That's better. Sorry, the windows were open because last night we have a very kind individual that makes herring for the Shabbos Kiddush. And he chose to do it last night, which is... Okay. But it's okay. So before we start, I'm actually interested in what you have to say. Like, what do you think the issues are now that people are struggling with? What are the emotions? What are the issues? I'd be interested to know from some of you, if you... Okay, anti-Semitism is one. What is that translating to? What are you...
Fear.
Fear. Yeah, fear is a big one. We're going to talk about fear today.
Why is so much anti-Semitism?
Yeah, we're not going to answer that today, because that's an eight-week series, I think. No, I don't... But yes, that's a good question. There are lots of questions. Questions are generally a big thing.
Where do we go from here?
Good. That's a very good one.
Insecurity
connected with fear also.
Sadness.
I think as a minority, my husband is amazed because he's out in the northern beaches and west. He's amazed by his customers saying, "Oh, it's all over, isn't it?" Like, you've moved on, haven't you? Like, nothing happened. No. That's a real strife. Yeah. The rest of Australia thinks that it's nothing.
Yeah, correct. So, but we need to talk about that, actually, about...
Yeah, exactly.
And we'll talk about it. There is a level of moving on that we do need to do, and that's together with not moving on. So we'll talk about that. Yeah.
But on that note, if I may...
Sure.
I was sent a video just Parliament, and Chris Minns got up and he was asked a question by the member for Coogee, what's happening with regards to since Bondi, and he actually got told to stop, he was going too long. He answered it in such a comforting way for me. If you can get hold of that clip, it is, he's saying, we cannot let this go, we can't just let another week, another month, and no, we have to keep this on the agenda.
Good.
And that was very, to me, reassuring.
It's good, very good. Yeah. If you find the clip, if you could send it to me, I'd appreciate it, thanks, yeah. So what you've said is sort of what I was thinking, and I think will be covered by most of what we're going to talk about. So I want to address four topics, which will incorporate some of the things you've been saying. I want to revisit just for a few moments, because we always have to do that. Revisit the concept of emunah and faith. I want to talk about anger. A lot of people are angry. Anger and blaming and so on and so forth, which is an important topic. Fear, of course. And where do we go from here? We're going forward, what do we do? So let's start with emunah, because as Jews, that's our basis, that's our foundation. And let's just start with an idea which is connected to this week. Emunah is a very broad topic, but it's always good to start with things that are around now, around the time. And the beginning of this week, on Monday, we celebrated a minor, or major maybe, but minor Jewish festival called Tu B'Shvat, which is the 15th of Shvat, which is called the Rosh Hashanah of trees, right? I'm not going to go into the whole halachic sort of process of what it all is now, but that's the concept. The concept is that the idea of trees and thanking God for trees that produce fruit, and it's a custom to eat fruit on that day, and so on. But we learn a lot of lessons and we focus on the concept of a tree. And one of the things that the Talmud tells us is that ki ha'adam eitz ha'sadeh, the person is compared to a tree. And there are countless lessons that we can learn from the fact that we are compared to a tree when we look at how a tree grows, what makes a tree strong, and so on. So I'm not going to go through all them now because that's a separate topic. But the one thing I wanted to focus on is this. And that is that we know from a tree that the strength of a tree, when a tree grows very tall and lasts for a very long time and is strong and so on, the strength of the tree depends on something we can't even see, which is the roots of the tree, right? Meaning you look at a tree, it looks very tall, looks very strong, it's actually nothing. If something happens to the roots, if the roots die, the tree will fall over in a second, right? In Pirkei Avot talks about it as well. And yet, that very foundation of the tree, which is what makes it strong and what makes it last, is hidden. It's under the ground, right? The commentaries tell us that when it comes to the human tree, the tree of growth, the tree of our experience, the concept of emunah is the roots of the tree. At the end of the day, as Jewish people, it all comes back to emunah. And I know we've talked about this a lot of times, but it's so important to remind ourselves all the time. Why? Because the basis of a Jew, for example, we know that when someone loses a loved one, the first thing they do, one of the first things they do is in time of grief, in time of sadness, in time of pain, and yet someone will get up at the grave and will say Kaddish. And what is Kaddish? Kaddish is, I think I mentioned this before, but Kaddish has nothing to do with the person that passed away. I don't know if you know that. The Zohar tells us that if you say Kaddish, you cause an elevation to the soul. But actually, it doesn't talk about death, it doesn't talk about the pain, it doesn't talk about anything. It talks about Yitkadal v'yitkadash shmei Rabbah, may God's name be glorified and great. And may there be a revelation of the Mashiach. We should get down God's blessing. In other words, it's an acknowledgement of the holiness of God, it's an acknowledgement of the greatness of God. And that's what we do at the very beginning. You don't even tell us, wait a month and then you'll, right? Now, that doesn't mean that we process emunah at all times in the same way, right? We know that there are stages of grief, and particularly in Judaism, not just in modern psychology. There are stages of grief, and there's a shock, and there's a time of sadness and crying and anger, all these type of things. We go through them and we process them, and so we should, because we have to process those emotions. But we always recognize that at the core of everything, we have to revisit and reconnect to our faith. Because faith is like roots. It's not something we always are conscious of or talk about all day. Because emunah is a perspective, it's a belief, it's an emotion almost, right? Judaism is not about that at the end of the day. Judaism is about action, as we'll talk about later. It's about doing. So most of the day, there's a thing that Rambam talks about. He says there are six mitzvot which are constant. There are six constant mitzvot. And one of them is faith, belief in one God. There's love of God, fear of God. These are emotional things that are supposed to be constant in a Jewish life, but it doesn't mean it's constant in a conscious way the whole time. Obviously it is, right? You know, I tell a story of a guy that was came to shul one morning and he was very, very disturbed. And he said, someone asked him, why so disturbed? And he said, because I dreamt a very bad dream last night. I dreamt something very bad about God. Something about God, something happened to God, whatever. So the guy wanted to calm him down. He said, no, listen, you know, we know you dream what you think about during the day. You were thinking about God, so you... He says, no, I was so busy giving shirim and doing mitzvot and connecting other people. I don't have time to think about God. That's why I'm disturbed, right? Which obviously is a terrible thing to say, because everything we do is connected with God, right? So on the one hand, it's a constant mitzvah at the forefront of our brain all the time. But yet on some level, it's a bit subconscious because we actually are doing, we're focused on doing something, right? In Tanya, the Alter Rebbe, the foundational book of Tanya, he says an interesting thing. He says about learning Torah, he says it's very bad to learn Torah and not remember that it's God's Torah. It's not just a subject, not just an academic subject, right? On the other hand, he says, when you learn, you need to focus, you need to use your brain, like you need to focus. What's the question? What's the answer? What's the analysis, right? So he recommends that, he says, when a person learns Torah for a number of hours, studying the Talmud is very academic, it's very intellectual, and he's trying to work out what the commentary is saying, why this opinion is like this and this opinion is like that. So he says every hour you should stop and just remind yourself whose Torah you're learning, right? That it's a godly Torah, not just some subject. So that's what I'm saying. It's not conscious all the time, although it's we are God-centered, hopefully, but it's not conscious. But then they come, and that's why it's like the roots. It's not conscious, but it's what guides and inspires everything that we do. And therefore, when things happen that shake our emunah, and understandably so, and raises all sorts of questions, and the why, and the why is so much anti-Semitism, and why is there pain in the world still, and why is there persecution, why has it been happening for the last thousands of years? They're all good questions. Many of them, most of them, don't have answers, but what they do have is emunah. And that's why at times like this, it's a Tu B'Shvat lesson, we have to remember what's the foundation of our existence. How do we dig deep? Communally, individually, how do we dig deep and reconnect with the roots of our existence, right? And emunah means a few things. Basically, the definition of emunah, we've talked about this before, but it's so important to remind ourselves, is acceptance and faith and belief that God operates from a completely different context, right? And therefore, emunah doesn't mean having answers. It means not having answers, right? Emunah means believing that there's no answer, and not having answers is such an important thing. Why is an important thing? Rama spoke about this in the summer learning when we had a panel together. And he said, because when you try, when you justify things, you actually go against what God wants us to do. We are given a mandate. Our mandate is to pray for good, to pray for what we call revealed good, right? And our mandate also is to understand that God is transcendent and way beyond any form of our understanding. No matter how smart we might be, we cannot enter into God's place. We cannot enter into God's mind. And therefore, when we try and explain God, in fact, it's offensive to God. First, he doesn't want us to justify. He doesn't want us to come to terms with grief and pain. That's not what he wants us. Whatever he does, he does. He's got a plan. He knows what he's doing. But he doesn't want us to justify. He doesn't want us to live in that space where we're justifying pain and challenge. And second of all, when we try to understand God, it's almost like saying, well, God is something or someone that I can understand. So we're belittling God, actually, by trying to understand his questions. That doesn't mean in Judaism questions aren't good. Questions are excellent. And there are many, many things that God has given us that we can ask questions and have answers. The whole Torah is based on that. The whole Talmud is all about challenging people and challenging and looking for answers when we are given things to understand that we're supposed to work out logically. But when God does something we don't understand, that's fine. And we don't need to understand, and we shouldn't even try to understand. The answer is that there is no answer, right? And yet we just accept. Rabbi Mas on that little piece said something very beautiful, which I never heard before. He said it's like the law, you know, this week's parsha actually is Yitro, it's the Ten Commandments, the giving of the Torah. And it says there, the halacha, the mitzvah of honor your father and mother, right? And one of the, in the code of Jewish law, it goes through what are the definitions of honoring parents, of respecting parents, the different halachot, very specific ones. One of them is you're not supposed to sit in your father's place. So if a parent has a designated place at the table, you're not supposed to sit in that place, right? And he, I don't know where, I think it came from some commentary, translated into how we honor our father. We don't sit in his place, meaning more figuratively speaking, right? We understand that his place is different than ours. His perspective is different from ours, right? But we don't live in that reality. We live in a different reality where things that God does, we just simply don't understand. And it's good that we don't understand, and we should pray for it to end. But nevertheless, we have to know we don't sit in his place. We don't understand his perspective and where he comes from. There have been stories of tzaddikim. I don't remember who it was. It was a great Hasidic Rebbe that he promised his students before he passed away that when he gets up to Shammai, when he gets up to heaven, he's going to make a big, big tumult, as they say in Yiddish, right? He's going to make a campaign. He's going to protest and say to God, you've got to end the suffering. You've got to end this. You've got to end that. You know, all that kind of stuff, right? And afterwards, he appeared to one of his devoted followers in a dream and told him that he couldn't do it. Why couldn't he do it? Because he said when his neshama came up to the world of truth, which is Olam HaEmet, the world to come, the godly world, he suddenly things became clear and he no longer had the questions. And therefore he couldn't do it. But we don't have access to that world, and we don't have access to that world on purpose. Because we have to, our job is to believe, but to demand. In our prayers, every day in the Amidah, 3 or 4 times we ask for Mashiach. We say to God, no, it's enough. We don't want this exile anymore. We don't want suffering. And that's our job. And our job is to believe that it's going to be okay. But when once in a while, when God does something we don't understand, our only fallback, and not as a weakness, as a strength, as a tremendous strength, like the strength of roots of a tree, is to fall back to the concept of emunah. We need to talk about it and explore it and understand it. That has been the thread, that has been the foundation of Judaism since the Torah was given, even before, from Avraham Avinu. But also, there's a different type of emunah I want to just mention, and that is the emunah in ourselves, so to speak. The belief in ourselves that we can do this, that we can have emunah. The belief in ourselves that we can get through this and we can come to a better place of light. Sometimes things happen and people feel, well, that's it, like I'm devastated and I'm not going to be able to move on and things like that. No, we can. Even when it's extremely dark, we know that light will come. And I just want to share with you something that came to me based on a talk of the Lubavitcher Rebbe last week on the, not last week, a couple of weeks ago when there was that National Day of Mourning and that big thing in the Opera House. But in the morning of that day, there was a just a little gathering. I go often to Jewish Care to before the festivals and I speak there, whatever, so I have a relationship with them. It's very beautiful. So they asked me just to come and say they had a whole ceremony for the National Day of Mourning and they asked me to come share an idea, a short idea. So what do I do when I look for ideas? You look at the Parsha of the week, right? That's always the inspiration of the week. By the way, it's just not just an easy thing to do. It's actually a whole concept of that. This is in parenthesis. The first Chabad Rebbe, the Alter Rebbe, once gave out an announcement that it's important to live with the time. And his Hasidim were very perplexed because if anything, Hasidus and Judaism in general doesn't do is live with the time, right? We live with our ancient history, our ancient beliefs. We don't believe in fitting into modern trends, right? So they couldn't understand what he meant. You've got to live with the time, right? Until his son gave over a message and explained that he said what the Alter Rebbe meant when he said live with the time is you live with the parsha of the week. Every week has a parsha, a Torah portion, and that's what gives enthusiasm and guidance for that week. Anyway, so that particular parsha a couple of weeks ago was the Parashat Bo. It's the parsha when the Jews left Egypt. But before they left Egypt, they were given the first mitzvah as a nation. Meaning there are mitzvot of the Torah prior to Exodus, but they were given the first mitzvah as a nation. And the first mitzvah they were given is to make the Jewish calendar, right? Which starts with the month of Nisan. Incidentally, if you don't have a binah calendar, it's out. You can take one at the office. That one starts from February, but the Jewish calendar starts from Nisan. And it's based on the lunar cycle, right? It's a huge thing that we're based on the lunar cycle. And he told him how to do it, that every month you should look for the beginning of the new moon, the sliver of the crescent of the moon that appears suddenly. But the way it works is, as we know, what is the cycle of the moon and why is it so important? So the cycle of the moon is like this, that every day it's about 29 and a half days. That's the cycle of the moon, which by the way explains why some Jewish months are 30 days, one Jewish month are 29 days. It's a whole system which balances out. So it's about 29 and a half days and a bit. But the way it works is that and especially in times of the temple, where they actually look every month for the beginning of the new moon and make the calendar based on the testimony of the new moon. Today we calculate it more, it's different, but it's based on that cycle. Now the way it works is that the moon, after half of the month, starts to, or at least it appears, to start to disappear and becomes smaller and smaller and smaller until actually it completely disappears. There's a couple of hours where there is no moon, meaning there is no visible moon, right? And then suddenly a sliver of a moon appears, and that's what we call in halakha, we call it the molad, the birth of the new moon. And Rosh Chodesh is based around that cycle, right? And that was the first mitzvah given to the Jewish people. And I was wondering why, and I think the answer is, God was giving us an incredibly important lesson. I'm giving you the first mitzvah, I'm about to take you out of Egypt, I'm going to make you a nation. But you should understand that this nation experience will take time, and it's going to be rocky from time, it'll go up and down, which is the Jewish history. But God said, what you need always to understand is that even when the moon, and the Jewish people are compared to the moon for many reasons, even when the moon disappears and there's complete darkness, not just a little bit of light, but no light, there's complete darkness, you should understand that very soon it reappears and there's a rebirth. And the rebirth is to become even stronger than before. And I think that's such an important lesson, because sometimes in... thankfully and thank God, we never had this so much in Australia on a global level. But it's happened in Israel, and we happened a lot of times during the world. We had a Holocaust, we had so many things in Jewish history. But for this time, it was something so personal to everyone living here. And it was very dark, and it was very dark, and it's still dark to some degree. But we have to understand that even when it's full darkness, we have to believe in our ability to reemerge and to become stronger, not just to bounce back, as we always talk about, to become stronger than before. Right. Interestingly enough, in modern psychology, this has now become a very spoken about concept in the whole area of trauma. Right. We had just the last couple of weeks, some of you might have heard them, we had two expert trauma teams out here from Israel. One was from Sheba Hospital, Tel HaShomer, the people that dealt with all the hostages and the wounded soldiers and things like that. Because some of them were very traumatized. And then from J-Ready, a group also experts in the South on trauma. Unfortunately, Israel is no stranger to trauma, right? And they spoke about training people to look out for people who are still traumatized. They spoke about the concept of PTSD, post-traumatic stress disorder, which some people will suffer from, not all. But they kept on emphasizing, and it was a real Israel sort of take. But it's corroborated by modern research, and that is, that actually people are much more resilient than people think, right? Now, in other modern psychology, which is not so in line with Jewish thinking, trauma has become a thing where you want to make everyone traumatized. Like everyone's trauma and everyone has trauma and everyone should have trauma. If you don't have trauma, something wrong with you. That's not true, and that's not the Jewish way, right? Now, everyone has initial trauma. In other words, there's a huge difference. I'll just share what they were explaining. It was very well put. There's a huge difference between a traumatic incident and trauma, right? Everyone experienced on some level, people that were there, people that were affected, people that know people, I think everyone is close to everyone on some level. That's a traumatic incident. That doesn't mean you're going to have trauma. Now, there are very, very, I'll just say this, I think it's an important thing to share in this context. There are reactions to trauma which are normal, and most people have them. And a variety of reactions, hard to sleep, even flashbacks, even just irritable, anger, all these things, they're all very normal. If you've had any of these, it's a very normal reaction to trauma. In the first month to 2 months, it's just very, very normal. Most people, 80% of people, especially those who got a bit of initial help, 80% of people will get over it after a month or two and will be fine. That's the power of resilience. I think, I don't know if you remember when I did the course on trauma, there was a book I quoted called The End of Trauma by George Benham. And he had a whole bunch of research based on the 9/11, where they built all these centers because they believed that there'd be thousands and thousands of people with PTSD and they'd have to deal with them. And it turns out most of them were empty, because although everyone was traumatized in the beginning, but most people were able to work through it. The power, that doesn't mean we work through the sadness so quickly or the grief. Grief and trauma are two different things. In fact, one of them said such a beautiful thing. She said she gets really upset when people refer to Israel as a traumatized nation. She said, we're not a traumatized nation. We might be a nation in pain or a grieving nation, but we're not a traumatized nation. We're a resilient nation, which is true. Now, so what happens is, just from a psychological point of view, after a month or two, official definition in the psychological terms is a month, but they said it's more than a month. But if after second month, third month, fourth month, people who still are having these symptoms, specific PTSD symptoms like flashbacks or lack of sleep or lack of appetite, all these things, and they're not doing well, then it's a time to understand that you suffer from PTSD, you need help. And if you need help, you need help. That's okay. And help is available. And help can actually help. It's not, people don't have to stay traumatized indefinitely. But most people, whatever, so I think that's part of the emunah that I wanted to highlight, believing in the power of resilience and believing that, especially with the Jewish support and the concept of emunah and the concept of God being with us all the time, I think that resilience becomes easier and becomes quicker, and we need to believe that it's possible and we have it within our soul. We have those roots, we just have to access them. Okay, the second thing I wanted to talk about is anger. And it's a complicated topic. So I hope I'm going to share this with some clarity. So there's been a lot of people that say that they're very angry. Understandably. Angry at the government, angry at the lack of action, angry at anti-Semitism, and so on. So it's very legitimate and it's very understandable. But it's not good to hang on to anger. Right? And the reason for that is, number one, anger is not good for you. It's not productive. It's not positive. And second of all, I want to just touch on a very sensitive topic in a way, right? Because as Jews, we are very used to living with two opposites at the same time. Sometimes even hard to understand how those two opposites come together, but they do. We've talked about some of this in different contexts before. Anger, a little bit, is a problem, because constant anger is a problem because it actually lets us off the hook a little bit. Let me explain. Anger means we blame someone or something for what happened, and we're very angry at that thing or that someone. So it's all Albanese's fault. It's all this government's fault. It's all this minister's fault. Now, I don't like to get too political, but in this case, everyone is the same on the same side, so it's okay, right? Everyone knows the government didn't do enough. We know that. We've been warning them for 2 years and didn't do enough. That's true, right? Everyone knows that other ministers haven't done enough. Everyone knows that certain protests shouldn't have been allowed to happen, and they did happen. Everyone knows that there was hate speech and speeches in mosques that no one held anyone to account, right? All true. It's not untrue, it's true. But what's not true is to say that it happened only because of that person. Why? Because as painful, it's also comforting, but let me explain why it's painful first. As painful as it is to say, we are believers. And part of that belief is that bad comes from God too. No one can be hurt unless God allows it to happen. Now, I know what that does is it makes the question much bigger, or the questions much bigger, right? But for me, actually, it's more comforting, and I'll explain why. I mean, doesn't mean I don't have the question. Of course the questions are there. I see people suffering. I see families suffering. We all do, and it's very, very painful. But at the same time, it can also be very strengthening. Because, I'll just tell you a beautiful little story that I must told the other night. Rabbi Ullman, as you know, his son-in-law was killed. He has a very elderly mother, and the mother, I think, is over 90. And she was at the event, and she was there, and then suddenly all this thing broke out, and people were screaming. There were two options, either running away or falling flat on the floor, right? And she could do neither. So she was very calm, and she, over 90, she accepted, this is probably going to be the end, and she was fine with that. And she slowly started to walk away. Very slowly. And she survived. And then, of course, like most people in this situation, have a bit of a survivor's guilt and so on. So she turned to her daughter-in-law, a woman's wife, and said, "I'm just so troubled. How come I, against a number of odds, is still alive, and yet my granddaughter's husband was killed?" And Mrs. Ullman, I guess with a great strength of faith, looked at her and says, "It just wasn't your time." Yeah. That's it. Now, of course, that makes the question huge. So then why is it not her time, but it's someone who's in the prime of their life? Why is it his time? We don't know. That's what M&I is. But God is involved in every detail. That doesn't mean that the people who didn't do what they were supposed to do are not to be held to account. They should be held to account, because we have a very complicated theological, philosophical concept in Judaism that works together. And that is that something to happen to you could never happen unless God allowed it. But at the same time, when it comes to morality, the person who did it made a bad choice. And therefore, we have this in our life all the time. We've spoken about this. That's why if I get broken into and someone steals my computer, we have a choice to live responsibility, and therefore I have to report him to the police so it doesn't happen to other people. And I have to put better locks on my door so that people don't break in. I've checked my mezuzah even to make sure I'm fully protected spiritually and everywhere. But at the same time, being angry while my computer was stolen actually is not a thing. I mean, we do get with people, we're human beings. But truth is that we're not supposed to be angry, because if my computer got stolen, it was supposed to be stolen. I'm just saying the computer analogy because it's easier to talk about. Right? Computer could be replaced. A person can't be replaced. But right? But that's how you describe it. Two things work together. I'm not doing it justice, because really this needs a long explanation to explain how it works together, but it does. So yes, the government did the wrong thing. This one did the wrong thing. There should be more security. They should have given us more this and more that, all true. And we have to advocate for that. And those that can advocate need to advocate. But at the same time, God is involved in everything that happens. It's a painful thing, but let me explain to you why it's also a very comforting thing. Because if something happened without God in this world, then it's a senseless, random thing. And for me, that's would make me more angry. Unbelievably angry. How can just a senseless, random thing happen that has no purpose? Because if it's only a human being that does some evil, then it's got no purpose. Then it's just a painful thing. And you can't...
We could say that it's unlucky or senseless.
Yeah, the people who are responsible for it, the people, the shooter itself, is a senseless person. And of course it comes from a senseless hatred. That's what I'm saying. I know it's a hard thing, but the two things have to go together. Because, yes, and that's why they have to be held to account, and therefore they should be held to account, and that's why there needs to be education, that people shouldn't senselessly hate. And we have to increase love and kindness and do whatever we can to prevent it. And that's going forward. But in the past, when something happens, we need to be able to turn it around and give it purpose. That's what the foundations of Judaism is. That even when something bad happens, we have to be able eventually, not right away, because there's time for grief and there's time for pain, and it's time to move forward. But as we move forward, we have to channel that anger into something and say, okay, it happened. God is definitely involved. Imo anachi b'tzara. God says in Tehillim, King David says, God is with you even in your suffering. And your job is not to explain why, but to explain what can I do to give it some purpose. What is my responsibility? The Rambam says very clearly that when something happens in the world, the most terrible thing one can do is to say that it just happened. It's mikra, it's a coincidence. There are good coincidences, bad coincidences. No, nothing is a coincidence. And because nothing is a coincidence, everything that happens in this world ultimately must be able to be given purpose. Even the things that we don't want to happen, and that we are charged and mandated with praying that it should never happen, and demand almost that it should never happen. But when it does happen, falling back on the M&I, we need to remember that it has a purpose, or we need to be able to give it purpose. Retroactively, not going forward. Going forward, we have to say the only purpose we have is good. But I think we have to say and take some responsibility. I don't mean take responsibility to say it happened because of me, God forbid. But we still have to be responsible and say the responsibility we have to ask ourselves is, what am I doing about it? Being angry with politicians doesn't do anything. Working with them does. That's not anger, that's different. Not all of us can. Not all of us have those connections. But those that do need to do that. Those that don't also need to do things. We need to do. We have to respond. anger, when we're angry, it kind of almost is, it's almost an attractive thing to be angry. It's like, well, we put all our emotions, we put it into anger. But that's not a good thing, because anger means that we don't have to do anything then. It's his fault. That's fault. That thing's fault. Responsibility means God runs the world. And yes, there were people that made terrible choices and choices based on senseless hatred, and they need to be held accountable. And we need to work to prevent them in the future. But we can't just walk away and say, I've got nothing to do with it. I do. I've got something to do with it, because it's something that happened. And I need to positively, with light and great and positivity, give it purpose. And my question I have to ask myself is not, am I angry? But am I urgent? Can I change that anger into urgency and reflect and say, okay, so what am I going to do going forward? And we'll talk about that, what that is, in a moment. So I just wanted to share that. I know it's a complicated thing, but I think it's such an important part of our faith. And for me, it's more comforting, because I want to be, if something, God forbid, bad happens, I want to be in God's hands rather than someone else's hands. Right? And we are in God's hands, and God is with us. He did something we don't understand and we don't want, but he's with us. Which also goes into, by the way, why, and this is something again that came up, we did a function the other night about this, where you look at something, and this is not the only event that happened, it's happened throughout the war of Israel. Rabbi Rimon talks about it a lot, but it happened even in the Holocaust, where terrible, terrible tragedies happened, and at the very same time, unbelievable miracles happened. It's actually not something that it's hard to get our head around, because it goes back to the question, I mean, if God can make miracles, so why can he make miracles for everyone? That's his business, I don't know. But we can also look at something, if we know that God is in the picture, we can also look at it and not only identify the tragedy, but also identify the miracles. And there's a special bracha you make on miracles. And if anyone saw the video of Label Lazarov, that student, yeshiva student who was here, who had, he's an incredible young man. He was very, very, very badly shot and injured and survived. He's a walking miracle. And he had 11 operations and he's walking. He's walking with a stick now, but he's walking. He's on the road to recovery and he'll be okay. I mean, no one understands it. The doctors don't understand it. There's a thing about he going back to the beach site, and there's a bracha. There's a bracha you say to Hashem when a miracle happens to you. And he made that bracha in front of you, a very emotional moment, if you saw the video. And you bless Hashem, sha'asali nesma makom hazeh. You thank God for making a miracle for me in this place. Right? So yes, it's a place of tremendous tragedy, and it's a place of tremendous miracles. And it doesn't contradict each other, because it's all God. And God is infinite and transcendent, and two things can happen at the same time. Again, at the same time, the people responsible, bad choices, we have to work, we have to do what we call a shtadlut. We have to do whatever it takes in the laws of nature to prevent something like that, but don't remove God from the picture. And therefore, we don't remove God from the picture. The question has to be not anger, the question has to be responsibility. What am I going to do about it? Thirdly, I wanted to discuss the issue of fear. Now, that's a hard one, because I'm not quite sure what the answer to that is, other than something that's not explainable. So what is fear? Fear is fear of the future, right? So I've heard people say, and understandably, fear is prevalent here in Australia at the moment more than other places, because we know that, and so much of the Australian community is a Holocaust survivor community, and the whole definition of Australia was leaving unsafety and coming to safety. And that world was shattered. We know that, right? Understand that. So, can we live here anymore? Should we go somewhere else? All these questions are coming up, right? Is the end of jury in Australia finished? Do we now relocate? All those kind of things. So first of all, fear is not fear is unhelpful generally. It doesn't change anything. Because basically the definition of fear is a good thing, by the way, in the moment, right? That's the fight or flight concept that God gave us. He designed us that way. He designed us to have fear for a reason, so that when you cross the road and you see a car speeding down the road, you're scared of it and you do something. Either you stop or you don't cross, or you run, whatever the case, whatever the responsible thing to do is. If you see an animal in the forest that's going to bite you, you run. That's fear. If you wouldn't be scared, you'd get bitten, right? So that's obviously a good thing. But when we talk about unhealthy fear, it's always about fear of the future, by the way, number one. And it's always about things that I cannot control. That's what happens, right? Different to urgency. In other words, fear means I'm anxious. What are you anxious about? Because I don't know what's going to happen next month. What is going to happen next month? I don't know. Can you control what's going to happen? No. If you did know, would you all do something about it? Also not, right? So a very, very practical tool of fear, by the way, is, and that's, it doesn't, and it paralyzes. So fear is not obviously not a good thing. It paralyzes. So one of the things that they talk about in fear, one of the team spoke about this as well, you actually, your fear is about the future, but it's actually fear is something you're experiencing now, right? And therefore we go back to the concept, which is a very Jewish concept also, about living in the moment. In other words, you wake up in the morning and the question has to be, and the question we have to ask ourselves is, oh, what's, not what they say in Yiddish, was wird sein, what's going to be? The question is, what is now? How do I make this day positive? You can't control next month anyway, right? You can do stuff to hopefully make a positive change, but you can't control 6 months from now, but you can control today in terms of your experience, in terms of your positivity, in terms of your response. So we need to shift that a little bit. When we're in fear, and we are, and it's, there's a legitimate part of that, right? There is a concept of learning to wake up in the morning and saying, what do I do today? What mitzvah can I do today? Who can I help today? What positive thing can I do today? What step in my own health can I do today? Whatever the positive thing is, that's what we have to be living. And stop living in a month from now, or 10 months from now, and things like that. Which is hard, but that's a foundation. Part of that, of course, from a Jewish perspective, is letting go of control, being in the moment, and having what we call bitachon. So bitachon is a big topic. We've talked about it many, many times. But essentially, bitachon and emunah are opposites. Right? Because we talked about before emunah. Emunah means accepting that something that happened has no reason, but God has a plan. He knows what He's doing. Right? Which obviously then becomes a problem. It's fantastic in terms of something that happened last week. But that means, and there are those that explain bitachon that way. Bitachon, by the way, is the opposite of fear. Bitachon, explained in the sources, is the concept of being in a state of calmness. Now, there can be two ways to be calm. One way to be calm is that just like I had emunah about something that happened last month, I accept it could happen again in a month from now, but I'm going to be calm because, you know, I believe it's all in God's hands. But that's not really bitachon. Bitachon means to actually believe that it's going to be good. Because why do I know that? Because God wants us to pray for good. And we know the power of prayer. And we know that we're supposed to believe that our prayers are listened to. Sometimes God says no. But our perspective, our constant has to be, it's going to be good. Now people ask the question, that's almost a contradiction. Because if I accept that what God did yesterday is ultimately for His plan and it's ultimately for the ultimate overall good of the Jewish plan until Mashiach, then why can't I just accept that going future? Why don't all of a sudden switch and say, yes, but going forward, it's going to be okay? So the answer is not almost a contradiction, it is a contradiction. And the Lubavitcher Rebbe explains this in many, many places, and he says, coming back to something we've mentioned today and many times, that is the power of a Jew. We hold two opposites together. And God wants us to hold those two opposites together. So once in a while, God wants it to be good, but once in a while, He will do something that is, to our eyes, not good. But our perspective for the future has to be bitachon, and it's, you can Google it, if you want to go on Chabad.org, there's lots of stuff there on bitachon, and it's important to learn about it, to think about it. But essentially what it is,
trust.
It's trust, and it's letting go, surrendering. Because, as we said many times, we are beings that we like to control things. Therefore, we get worried about something in the future which we can't control. We want to have a grasp on what's going to be, understand what's going to be, and so on and so forth. Bitachon is about letting go. It's about controlling ourselves rather than controlling anyone else or the world. And we let go, understanding that we are very finite, and we put ourselves into God's hands and let Him run the show and believe that He will do good. So we need to, and now's the time where not only we have to access our emunah, we also have to access our bitachon going forward. And I want to just address the question about, should we leave Australia? Right? Maybe it's controversial, I'm going to say, I don't know. But so my answer to that is the following. If you're making Aliyah and going to Israel, I can't argue with you. Fine. So let's put that out. You tell me I've had enough of Australia, I'm going to live in Israel, I'm with you. I'm coming soon too. Not yet. Because because you're in a place, you have a job to do. Anyway, but that's a separate discussion. But if I had to move anywhere today, it would be Israel for sure, right? Because that's Yeah, things happen in Israel too, but that's God's land, it's God's home. I mean, the whole world is God's home. But that's, you know, God's hands there in a tangible way, and it's just a beautiful feeling there. And God looks after the land ultimately, we know, right? Other than Israel, should we leave Australia? So my answer is no, for two reasons. First reason is, where are you going? What are you thinking? Texas, it's better? I mean, right? Just because something hasn't happened in Texas. I mean, if you're leaving because you don't want something to happen in the future, every time something has happened in the last few years, not so much Europe, but even in America or you know, Europe, unfortunately, our history is used to it. But elsewhere, like in America, Australia, so whatever it is, everyone's always surprised. And then it becomes a place where it's not safe anymore. But just because it hasn't happened yet doesn't mean it's safe, right? So on a rational level, I'm not sure people want to run to, again, other than Israel. But actually, on a deeper level, we have a pasuk, a verse that says, "Hashem mitzadei gever konanu." Hashem plans the steps of the human being. We are where we're meant to be. Now, sometimes we have a compelling reason to move. Family issues, other issues, whatever the case is, right? And that's fine. I mean, people don't expect to always stay in the same place their whole life. I didn't, most of you didn't, and that's fine. There are compelling reasons, responsible reasons, normal reasons why people move country or move place. But there is a perspective that you don't run away from a place just because something happened. Because where you are is where you're meant to be. And going on what we said before, that actually, now we have a responsibility now, a special responsibility. And by the way, the initial reaction of the Jewish community as a community, and Australia as a country, has been phenomenal. It's actually phenomenal. We should pat ourselves on the back. It's phenomenal, the positivity, the not retreating, the coming out 8 days later on the beat. It's been phenomenal, right? People engage more with their own Judaism. It's fantastic. You have to keep it. That's a different story. But it has been amazing. Why? Because that's the Jewish way. And that has to continue. And the spreading of light has to continue. And the finding ways to give tragedy purpose. Again, that's not a welcome for tragedy. I always make sure to mention that. But when it does happen, our job is to give it purpose. And that is our responsibility. Our responsibility is to make Australia a better place. If we're not moving to Israel. To make Sydney a better place. To spread more light where we are. Because where we are is where we're meant to be. We have a mission. We all have a mission here. People often ask me why I don't think of moving from Australia, because I said I came here on shlichut. I came here with a mission. It was the Rebbe's thing, but to send people over the world. And that's my mission, and I'm not leaving unless, I don't know what. I mean, I'm leaving. Mashiach comes hopefully very soon. We're all leaving. We're going to Israel. But in the meantime, this is my mission. But the Rebbe would always say that there's that network of shluchim. When he would talk about the emissaries and he would talk about the shluchim, he says, yes, there's a formal network of shluchim. He says that's in a very formal way. But every Jew is a shliach. Every Jew has a mission. We were sent down to this world with a mission. And the mission is to make ourselves better and our environment better, not just ourselves. That was Noah, you know, the story of Noah. He put himself in an ark and he's always criticized by the Zohar. He was a righteous person and he was saved, but he was saved. I've told you this expression before. He was saved like a tzaddik in a fur coat, right? I've told you this analogy before. There's two ways to warm yourself up when it's cold. You either light a fire or you put on a coat. You put on a coat, you keep warm, everyone else is still cold. You light a fire, you make everyone else warm. Avraham Avinu, he started the process where you don't put on a coat, you light a fire. And you make everyone else warm, right? So we have a mission. And I think right now, personally, and I'm not taking responsibility for anyone's life, but personally, my view is, and I'm not a great Hasidic master, I don't have divine inspiration, but I can only base myself on the teachings that I know, that now's the time actually to strengthen Australia, to stay here. Again, unless you want to Israel, but to stay here and to not retreat. And to say we're here to stay, to be more Jewish here, to make our Jewish environment stronger and better and wider, and to make the place a better place, and to spread more morality and more kindness and more holiness and more godliness. Which leads me very, very quickly to the last point, and that is going forward. So we have I'll make this brief. So we going forward in Judaism, we have this concept that we don't ever move on one hand, because we have a concept in Judaism called to remember, right? Everyone knows that. We have Holocaust Day, all these things, because we don't forget, actually. We remember, Zachor, right? But what sometimes people do forget is the following, that as important as remembering is in Judaism, Remembering alone is not enough. It just traps you in the tragedy. It's important, but it's nowhere near enough. And I base this in a month's time, we're going to celebrate Purim. And in Purim, there's also a mitzvah to remember. Remember Amalek, and to remember the story of Purim, which is a part of the Amalek story. Right? That's where Zachor comes from in the Torah. But the story in the Megillah says that Hayamim Ha'ele, these days, Nizakarim need to be remembered, the Na'asim, they need to be actioned. Need to be actioned. Action, action. We need to do something. Remembering is just puts us in the past. Action lets the past inspire the present and the future. It's very different. And therefore, we need to remember in general that in Judaism, the power of action is unbelievably powerful. In the way, in the human experience, it's like the lowest sort of form of experience. Intellect is complicated and very lofty. Emotion is strong. All these things. Action is like down there, but action is the most important thing in Judaism. It brings morality, it brings values, it brings Judaism, it brings godliness, and makes it tangible in the world. It makes it affect the physical world. And therefore, the going forward is, we again, do two things at the same time. We don't move on, we always remember, we'll never forget. Life cannot return to normal, but not in a way where we get stuck in the tragedy, but in a way where we remember and feel the pain, but we do, we actually do. We all take, I mean, so far that it's been an amazing response. I mean, I don't know if you know, but at the beach there's these two booths where people are putting on tefillin with, and there's been, till today, I thought it would like fizzle out after 2-3 weeks, but it's still going. The whole day, people are lining up to put on tefillin. It's incredible, right? Tefillin, Shabbat candles for women on time, another mitzvah, another kindness. We have to stop and think, what can we do? Let's take upon ourselves something that's action, not just a feeling or not just speech, but action. To learn something extra, to do something extra. And that's how we grow. And please God, we will grow, because that's what Jewish people did. And we grow not just to come back where we were before, but to grow and become stronger than we were before. We have to get together. Connection with each other is very important. As a group and as individuals, we need to move forward with all the questions and all the attaching to Amunah and so on, but going forward, we'll never forget, but we need to do and try and move over to the concept of giving it purpose and thinking about how can I do something new or something extra, bring more purpose and morality and spirituality and godliness into the world. Next week, we'll start a new series, the Let Them Theory. Yes.